I want to just kind of talk with you some about this ministry and where we're headed and how you're to be involved and some things that I hope will be helpful to you. You know, years ago, one of the things I noticed about many ministries is that people grow to a level, to a certain degree, and then they level off. And you've seen that. You've probably observed it. You see that in many, many churches. You'll see it with some of your friends right here on campus. They will grow to a certain degree, and then they're going to level off and never will get the depth in their life. They never will have the ministry they could, because that's what happens to people. I think you see it in churches all the time, and I think there's some reasons for it. I remember a number of years ago being up at Kansas State, and I happened to have breakfast with a pastor there. And he said, "You know, I really noticed something different about the ministry here at Kansas State." He said, "I was a pastor in another state, and I was right next to BSU, and he said, I see something very different since I've been here." He said, "You know, at Kansas State, there are a lot of juniors and seniors and graduate students that are involved in the ministry." He said, "Back where I came from, a person was in the BSU usually when he was a freshman and sophomore, and after that, they got real busy in their majors, and they just weren't around anymore." And I said, "Well, do you you want to know why that is? I don't have to go to the state where you are, but I know what's happening here. You know why that is? You know why there's still juniors and seniors around here and around in this ministry? It's because Bob Anderson has a program in which you can start as a freshman and you can continue to grow until the day you graduate. And even if you're a graduate student, there's something for you." Now, I think one of the problems we have across this nation in our churches is that everything is for everybody. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, everybody come. Everybody comes Sunday school. Everybody comes preaching. Everybody comes prayer meeting. Now, they stay away in droves in a lot of situations. But still, everything is for everybody. There's not. And so if you've been a Christian for 40 years, you sit right here beside the guy who just accepted the Lord last week. And that's okay for a worship service. But a number of years ago, we began to notice something we noticed something with freshmen. Although freshmen could come to Vespers, and they could be in a dorm Bible study, we kept hearing that freshmen didn't really feel like they were a part. I mean, they could come to Vespers, they could come to a dorm Bible study, but they didn't really feel like they're a part of BSU. And one of the things we began to think, you know, freshmen have some special needs. And if you're here, let me just explain something to you. If you're a freshman, and I hope you'll agree with this. If you don't, keep your mouth shut, all right? Because all of this is involved as we're talking about where we're going next year and how we want you to be involved. Freshmen have some special needs. And one is they need friends. And some of you, like for example, Dave Larson's here, when he comes in here from South Dakota or some part of the world like that, he gets on campus, he doesn't know anybody. Some of you are that way. Or maybe you were from town and once you got here, you really didn't know anyone. Or you knew very few people. And one of the special needs freshmen have, they need friends. Now, another thing, if they're Christians, they need a special kind of friend. You know, if you're going to walk with the Lord, you're not going to do it just hanging around anybody. Did you know that? Now, certainly we want to have non-Christian friends and we want to try to reach people, but your primary friendship, if you're a Christian, you need other friends. You need peers. And peer pressure, you hear a lot about peer pressure, but peer pressure can also be good. Some of you, this year in discipleship team, you have memorized verses that you've never been successful at in your whole life, but you've done it this year. Why? Because there's some peer pressure. Because when you come to discipleship team, it's time to quote your verse. You say, "Well, that's not a very good motive." Well, maybe it's not. But most of us don't live on Simon pure motives all of our life, right? And I'd rather memorize them with a little bit of pressure, not having to, and let God work on me with those verses than not have them memorized. I mean, all these people are going to live with a perfect motive. See how they're doing sometime in their knowledge of the Scriptures. Now, I'm just saying that one of the things freshmen need, they need friendship. They need to become involved in the right kind of things or they're not going to turn out right. And so that's one of the things when we started the freshman ministry team, or later we call freshman encounter, it was to try to provide a place for freshmen where they can begin to grow, they can begin to be exposed, and our desire is that when they start coming, And they start coming to the BSU. They go to Vespers and things. Then our desire is that they become involved to the point that they're going to stick around. Now, when we first started, I mean, every year we have this happen. When we first start, we reach out to freshmen. Some come around, and over a period of time, they're not around anymore. Now, that grieves us. We wish we could hang on to everybody because we know basically where we're going with you if you stick around. And we know undoubtedly if you do stick around and you respond to what God is going to expose you to through the years, that when you graduate, you're going to be a whole lot better prepared for life than you were if you're not around. And so we know that because we know some of the things that you're going to be exposed to. And so therefore, we make a tremendous effort to get people involved as freshmen. And that's why every year we go after freshmen. Now, why freshmen? Another thing is when people make a big change in life, they're far more susceptible. They're far more open to the things of the Lord than they are at any other time. I mean, you can find this. I mean, for example, the Japanese. Japan, I know at one time, and it's not a whole lot better now, but less than 0.5% of the people of Japan living actually in Japan are Christians. Now, it may be up to somewhere around 1% now. And yet, when you go to Brazil and look in the Japanese community, there's a far higher percentage of people, of the Japanese people who live in Brazil that are Christians. Much higher percentage. Why? Because when people are uprooted, when they come to a new situation, for the first time in their life, many of them become more open. And so when people move away from home, come here, they're probably more open or can be to the things of God. And some of you know this, that it would have been very hard for you to walk with God back in your home situation. I remember one night walking down the freshman encounter meeting and hear a student giving his testimony. And he said, you know, back at home, I wanted, in my high school, I really wanted to be a Christian, but I didn't know anybody else that was that serious about it. But when I come here to this meeting and hear 49 other people just like I am. And so that's one of the reasons we go after freshmen. Now, there's several reasons. There's some things in it for you as freshmen because you're going to learn some things and you're going to begin to learn things and you're going to continue to build on that for the rest of the time you're in school. And when you get out of here, there is a phenomenal difference. And I've seen this through the years. A phenomenal difference between those who become involved and pay the price to be involved and then their buddies who don't. Because they're much better prepared for life with things that they know and things that are going to be very helpful to them in the future. And so one of the things, now, so there's a lot in it. If a person becomes involved when they're a freshman, there's a lot in it for them. I mean, we, I believe, before God, will help save you from many, many heartaches if you will learn to walk with God now. Now, the other thing, one of the things that, as far as this ministry is concerned, one of the great needs is for laborers. Now, laborers don't just happen overnight. You know, they have to learn some things. You have to have certain knowledge over a period of time as you begin to gain biblical knowledge. You have to gain perspective. You have to see what's important, what isn't. You have to learn about priorities. You have to begin to get some convictions, some biblical convictions as to what's important and what isn't, how you're going to live, how you're not going to live. And those are all things that come with time. And so there's a tremendous need for laborers, and you can become those laborers. Now, when you get to be sophomores, you come back, and many of you have already experienced this, you come back, you're invited to be on a discipleship team. Now, there's some changes. Some of you have noticed. When we were freshmen, we met a great deal in large groups. When you get to be a sophomore, we put you in small groups. You say, well, I like the big groups. Well, fine. I'm glad you like the big groups. But when you get to be a sophomore, you don't spend a lot of time in the big groups. Why? Because for training, see, the first year we emphasize just growth and exposure and you're beginning to walk with the Lord. But then we want you to get in a small group where there's some accountability, where there's some... the small group is much better for sharing your life. It's much better for learning and growing as you begin to share your life. It's much better for faithfulness. You know, many times when a person's a freshman, you just show up, we're tickled to death. I mean, we are thrilled that you just walk through the door. But when you get on the discipleship team, we're not just thrilled to death that you walk through the door. you know, we want you to arrive having done your assignment. We want you to make some commitment. And you don't just come to the ministry, to the discipleship team, when you feel like it or you don't have a test or something. We want you to begin to build some faithfulness in your life. And so that's what we work on when you're a sophomore. The things that you've been exposed to, that you begin to get some depth in those things. You've known something about the Word. You've memorized some verses and things as freshmen. But now you begin to concentrate more on growing and developing. And the emphasis is on your growth. We want you to grow. Now, some of you come from other schools, or some of you have come in, maybe you were in a high school youth group, you got here, you were a freshman, and you wondered why we didn't put you in a place of leadership. Because we're not interested primarily in raising up leaders right now. Do you know that? I mean, we're first of all interested in producing servants. And what you find from Jesus' concept of leadership is who is to be the greatest among you. It's the one who is to be the servant. Now, there will emerge leaders, and we have to have leaders. Any organization has to have leaders. But when you, after you've finished your sophomore year, and many of you are being interviewed and you're being invited to come on the ministry team, we don't want you to look at coming on the ministry team as now I'm ready for leadership. Some people just think automatically, if I do this when I'm a freshman, I go through FE, I go through DT, when I get to be a junior, I'm a leader. I mean, the fact that you graduated, I mean, you finished your sophomore year, does not automatically make you a leader. Now, when you come on the ministry team, and what we're very, very interested in is you come on wanting to be a servant, that you're going to learn to walk with God. Now, again and again, and I want to just take you to a few passages. If you have your Bible, I want you to look at Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20. It's interesting that in every one of the Gospels, this is recorded. You know, sometimes you'll find an incident recorded in Matthew, but it's not in Mark. Or it's in Mark and John, but it's not in Luke or some other place. But at least this basic teaching is found in each one of the Scriptures. In Matthew chapter 20 and verse 20, it says, "Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to him with her two sons, bowing down and making a request of Jesus. And he said to her, 'What do you wish?' And she said to him, 'Command that in your kingdom these two sons of mine may sit, one on the right and one on the left.'" Now, what's she basically wanting for her sons? What's she wanting? She's wanting a leadership, a leadership position. One on the right, one on the left. Jesus is the chief, and he's got one on the right, one on the left. I mean, here are people that would be recognized, and that's what she's wanting. And Jesus said to her, "What do you wish?" She said to him, "Command that in your kingdom these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right, one on your left." But Jesus answered and said, "You do not know what you're asking for. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" Now here he's talking about his death. Do you know what it's going to be like if you sit on the right hand and on the left hand of Jesus? Do you know where Jesus is going? You know where I'm going? You want one on the right, one on the left? Are you able to drink the cup that I'm fixing to drink of? In other words, are you ready to be crucified? You want to be with me? You want to be a leader? On right hand, right, you know where I'm headed? They said to him, "Well, we're able." And he said to them, "My cup you shall drink." And they did. I mean, later they were both killed. They both lost their life. "My cup you shall drink, but to sit on my right and on my left, that's not mine to give, but it's for those for whom it's been prepared by my Father." And hearing this, the 10 became indignant with the two brothers. Now these are the other 10 disciples. But Jesus called them to himself. Now why were they indignant? Why do you think they were indignant? Anybody have an idea? Probably mad that their mother didn't show up, right? I mean, that's probably one reason. I mean, they were indignant with these other disciples. I mean, the very idea that these guys sit on the right and left and leave me out, see? I mean, I ought to be on the right. I ought to be on the left. On the right, probably. But Jesus called them to himself and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It's not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your what? Servant. You want to be great? You want to be a great leader? Then become a servant. Whoever wishes to be a first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Okay? Why did Jesus come? It wasn't to be served, it was to serve. Now, any time you have a lot of people around ministry, if you don't watch out, you're going to find in your own heart, I'm here to be served. I'm here to be served. Now, that means I want the best discipleship team leader you got. I got stuck in a group here. I don't think my leader's as qualified as they ought to be. They probably aren't. If you get on one of the staff members' teams, you're also going to find out they're not exactly what you thought they would be. I mean, you're going to find they've got clay feet also. You're going to find out when you get in a place of leadership, you know what you're going to find out? You aren't as hot as you thought you were either. And the people in your group are going to find that out in a giant hurry. See? I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, Jesus didn't come to be served. He came to serve. Okay? That's Matthew. Let's look at Mark, the next gospel. Mark 10. Okay, in verse 32, they were on the road. They were going up to Jerusalem. This is Mark 10:32. And Jesus was walking on ahead of them, and they were amazed, and those who followed were fearful. And again, he took the 12 aside, and he began to tell them what was going to happen to him, saying, behold, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and the scribes, and they'll condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles, and they'll mock him and spit upon him and scourge him and kill him. 3 days later, he'll rise again. And James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came to him, saying to him, teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask of you. See, isn't this cute? Don't you love that? They come, Jesus, we want you to do whatever we ask. And they don't tell him what they have in mind, but just like, go ahead, say you'll do it. And then we'll tell you, see. We want you to do whatever we ask. And he said to them, what do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, grant that we may sit in your glory, one on your right and one on your left. But Jesus said to him, you do not know what you're asking for. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? And they said to him, we're able. And Jesus said to him, the cup I drink, you shall drink. You shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit on my right and on my left, that is not mine to give. For it's for those for whom it's been prepared. And hearing this, the 10 began to feel indignant with James and John. Okay? And calling him to himself, Jesus said to him, you know that those who are recognized as leaders of the Gentiles lord it over them, their great men exercise authority over them, but it's not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. Okay? So Mark records it. Now let's look at Luke. Luke 20. Let me find it here. Luke 22. If I get in the right chapter, we might find it. I have lost my place. Here's the world. Luke 20. 24. I wasn't finding a place to start. Now, there arose a dispute among them as to which one of them was the greatest. Now, this is interesting. They're walking along, the disciples, Luke 22, 24. 22, 20. What did I say? Did I say it right? Luke 22, 24. And there arose a dispute among them as to which of them was regarded to be the greatest. This beautiful thing. They're walking along and they're beginning to say, who's the greatest? So they begin to talk. Well, I think, you know, I hate to say it this way, but I think I'm better than John. You know, and they discussed it. I don't know. Somebody might have been humble enough to have said the other guy. He probably didn't mean it, but he probably said it. So Jesus said to him, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Let him who is the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as a servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? And look on down to verse 12. That's all we need to see right now. Now, look at John 13. You know, it's interesting. Jesus had just told them, when this every time is recorded here, he had just told them where he was going. He's going to Jerusalem to die. Can you imagine how Jesus felt? I mean, knowing what was ahead of him. And so he's telling them where he's going to die. And they're just talking about who's the greatest. And when you come in your glory, who can be on your right and on your left? Now in John 13, verse 1, now before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he should depart out of the world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And during supper, the devil having put it in the heart of Judas to betray him. And then in verse 5, knowing all that was going on back in verse 4, Jesus... Well, let's read verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, he had come forth from God and was going back to God. He rose from supper, laid aside his garment, took a towel, he girded himself about. And he poured water into the basin, and he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And you remember, it records how he came to Peter and he didn't want him to do that. And so Jesus explained to him the way more perfectly. And then in verse 14, he said, if I then, the Lord and teacher, wash your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you. Truly I say to you, a slave is no greater than his master, neither is the one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, now notice, if you know these things, you're blessed if you do them. You know, the word blessed here is the idea of happy, joy. And Jesus assumed that they know these things. I mean, he set the example for them. And he said, now, I've done this. You know this. But you're happy if you do these things. You know, one of the reasons some of you are so sad and why you are so empty and at times... And one of the reasons is because you're not being obedient to the things that God has told you to do. And that's one of the things Jesus makes very clear here. Happy, blessed are you if you do them. Now, you may know them, but knowledge does not bring joy in a Christian life. It's when you're obedient to the things that Jesus has told us to do. And so, now notice, I want you to notice one thing. Jesus, knowing who he was, he knew he had come from God, and he knew he was going to God. Jesus knew who he was. Now, if you're going to be a servant, you've got to know who you are. You've got to know where you came from and where you're going. And you're going to have to know your own position in Jesus Christ, the fact of what God has done in your life, that He has redeemed you, that you're a child of God. You don't have to earn His blessing. You already have His blessing. And now, because you know who you are in Christ and you know where you're going, then you can give your life away and you can be a servant to others. Now, when you come on the ministry team, and those of you that are on the ministry team, we want you to come on with the idea, I want to be a servant of Jesus Christ. I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to serve anywhere. I want to do anything He wants me to do. Now, some of you have really tried, and you've prayerfully, some of you made a real price, some of you moved from one dorm to the other, and you've tried to strategically locate yourself in order to have a ministry. Now, on that floor, like, for example, many of you we have most of the tri-suites, at least one on every floor, where they're freshmen, with the exception of one floor next year in Walker. Okay? I mean, I'm talking about on the guys' side. We don't have them all on the girls, but there's a bunch of them. And it's because you strategically placed yourself to be on that floor. Now, what we want to see on that floor, and anybody else that's involved, is that you are a team, and we're going to work to do everything we can to see people come to know Jesus on that floor and to see people begin to grow. Now, when you have five people on one floor, not all can be freshman coordinators. Right? There will only be about seven fellows, about seven girls that will be freshman coordinators. Why? Well, and I want to say this to you. When we talk with you, and many of you, you'd like to be a freshman coordinator, let me ask you, I want to ask you a question, is why? Do you know that when you take a place of leadership, basically what Jesus said that you're to do in a place of leadership is you're to be a servant to those people? And is the reason you want to be a freshman coordinator is because maybe you can round up in your family group, maybe you can have 15 or 20, and you're willing, and the reason you want to be is because you want to be a servant to 20 people. You want to pray for them. You're going to go after them. You're going to try to invite them to meetings. You're going to try to give your life to see that those 20 people begin to really grow in the Lord. Is that why you want to be a freshman coordinator? Because let me tell you, that's exactly what you're asking for. You want to be a discipleship leader? You want to take four girls in your discipleship group and you want to pray for them? And you want to be faithful to them and you want to work, and sometimes you work and work and work and you try to be ready and you try to come? And some of them will come if it's convenient or try to? Is that what you want? And you want to pray? And it doesn't make any difference if you got three tests the next day. You're to be there. You're a freshman coordinator? You're here every Tuesday night. You got three tests the next day? Fine. You start studying for your test after the meeting's over. You understand that? See, sometimes we think of leadership. Boy, I want to lead. Let me tell you, leadership is one of the scariest things you're ever going to touch. Because leadership, basically, according to what Jesus said, he who is a leader is servant of all. So if you're a leader of any group, you're to be a servant to everyone in that group. Now, we don't want to scare you away from leadership. But see, like on the floor, somebody needs to lead a Bible study. There are other people, and you're not ready, maybe. You feel like in your heart, I don't want to lead a Bible study. I don't feel like I'm ready for that. Some of you are ready to be coordinators, or you're ready to lead a Bible study. But there are others of you there, you could be a tremendous help. Because there won't be anybody in that Bible study unless there are other people helping to get people to that Bible study. And what we want to see on those floors is just that here's a little group of people and we're committed together. One will be a coordinator, fine. One may lead a Bible study, fine. Somebody else helps round them up for Bible study, fine. Somebody else goes puts notices on the door every Monday so they can't forget about FE, fine. You try to invite them to vestry, invite them to church. Don't worry. Let's don't worry about titles. We thought about just doing away with the thing ministry team, because some people begin to feel like, well, if I'm not on it, I guess I can't be a minister. See? Yeah, you can be a minister. You don't have to have a title. So, now, as you know, there has to be leadership. Someone has to be over here, see that the chairs are set up, and that somebody's playing the music, and somebody's going to when the freshmen come over here, we're going to break them down into smaller groups, part of that time, family time. Somebody has to lead that. But if that's you, great. If it's not you, you pray for those people. I remember a number of years ago being invited down to Peter Lord's church. And I was over in there. They built a retreat center right on their church grounds in a motel. And I was just over there one day trying to get some time and pray and this type of thing. And one of the ladies who was kind of a maid there taking care of the retreat center didn't know I was in one of the rooms because there wasn't anybody else in the whole 20 bedrooms or so. And I just happened to be in there. And so she just kind of burst in the room with her vacuum cleaner. So I mean, oh, I'm sorry. And so I said, introduced myself and told her who I was. And she said, oh, you're the speaker this week. And I said, yes. And she said, oh, you're speaking to the leaders, all of the discipleship group leaders, aren't you? And I said, yes. She said, I've been praying for you. She said, now, I don't get to go to that tree because I'm not a discipleship team leader. But I'm in a discipleship team. And my leader's going and she's going to be there. And boy, I'm just praying for her that God will work and teach her stuff and she'll come back and share it with me. And she was so excited. I mean, she was more excited than most of the people that got to go. And I thought, what a tremendous spirit and attitude she had. She wasn't looking for any position. She wasn't bent out of shape because she didn't get to come. She was just delighted that her leader was going to go and she's going to pray for her leader. And she knew that whatever God wanted her to have, she's going to get. Now, that's the kind of spirit I hope we can have in this ministry. And you're going to find that in servanthood is not always easy. It's not always convenient. Sometimes there's things that need to be done. And if we can have around this ministry just a bunch of servants, then let's let God call out the leaders, okay? I mean, if God wants to have somebody to do something, fine. But what we need are servants. Does that make sense? And so that's just what I want to say to you tonight. Now, we're excited. There is a place for everyone. Now, I want to say another thing. One of the things that, there's several things we feel important, that's important in a ministry. One is a large group is important. That's why we have Thursday nights. Because the large group is good for worship. We come together, we worship. The large group is good for teaching. I mean, if there were 20 more people here tonight, it would not necessarily cut down on the effectiveness of what I'm now doing. I mean, if these chairs up here were full, I mean, it'd still be okay. It wouldn't be all of a sudden we have 10 more people, we're 10% less effective, see? I mean, a large group I wish people were hanging out the window, see? Because in a large group, you can still motivate, you can still teach, you can still worship together. So that's important. But there's something else you see in the New Testament, and that's the small groups. And it's in those small groups where you learn to share your life with another person, where there can be some accountability, where we can get into each other's life, and whatever you do in your small group, don't hide. You know, let people know your problems. Don't hide your problems. People know you got them anyway, so why don't you just go ahead and be honest with them and let somebody help you with them. See, I'd say this to you. We have people like Dick here that have had training in biblical counseling. Mark Mingle will be joining us next fall, also on the staff. And there are people like this and people that are in the staff and others. They want to help you, but we can't help you if you hide. So get in a small group. Learn to share your life. You got problems, let them know you have problems. Everybody in that group knows you got problems anyway. And so but the small group is so much better for accountability, as we've said. But there's something else that's important, and that's person to person. Now, a lot of what you see in the New Testament is not where Paul said to Timothy, Timothy, I'll meet you at 3 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon. Every Tuesday, we'll go over your verses. See, I don't find that anywhere in there. Now, Paul met with Timothy. He spent a lot of time with him. But one of the things we're also beginning to see is we're having more people now in the ministry. Because usually, when a person's been a junior or senior, we've tried to have them on a team with a staff member. Well, we can't possibly do that. I've just found, like, for example, if I'm leading a freshman team and I can have about 7 guys, I can meet with those 7 and I can try to be ready for the meetings and I can try to do other things that come with a responsibility here. But I cannot meet with 20 students individually an hour a week every week. But I want you to know that this is true of me and I think it's true of anyone on the staff. If there's ever a time you want to talk to me about something, you may not be on a team that I'm leading, but you say, hey, I'd like to ask you about something. Or you want to go to Dave Everett. You may not be on his team, but you want to ask him about something, you can go do that. But it's not going to be possible for every one of you to be on a team with a staff person. You understand that? I mean, if we take every single junior, senior, and graduate student and try to make them be on a team with a staff, but that's not what everybody needs anyway. I mean, there's still times that we're going to get time with you. We're going to try to have some of you. We've got some people that have been around. They'll be in their fifth year. Some of you may be with those. You may be meeting with them. They can be helping you. You can get to a staff person when you need them. You understand that? Because, I mean, it's obvious if a ministry grows, you cannot be man-to-man with a staff member every week. Does that make sense to you? Now, we want to do everything we can to help you to grow, to be all God wants you to be. And I believe that this can happen. Now, let me just bring this to a close by saying a few things to you in a practical nature. We would really encourage you to stay for the week after school's out, if you can do that at all. We want to invite every freshman, every person that's on freshman encounter, everybody on DT, everybody on ministry team, and everybody else. I mean, if you just walked in here tonight, you're invited. Because what we're going to do now, in the past few years, we've had different training. Like many of you have heard about the ranks. If you're going on to ministry team, many of you have gone to the ranks. You've gone to these different training programs. But we felt this year we wanted everyone together so that we can spend a few days praying. We're going to be talking. We're going to try to know where people are going to be living, what they're going to be doing, who will be leading Bible studies, who will be leading teams, who will be just parts of teams, so that everybody knows what everybody's doing, and so that when school starts next year, and even as we go out for the summer, we can pray for each other, we know what we're trying to do. So if at all possible, hang around a week. If you get your job, just tell them. They don't know when you graduate anyway. And they want to know when you can go to work, just tell them when you can go to work. But don't tell them the week after school's out, okay? If you can stay, it's going to be a tremendous week. Those of you that went to Glen Eyrie, you know that's a different experience. But I tell you what, I think what we'll do at the retreat center will be an extremely meaningful time. And so if you can, stay for that. Then also, we want as many of you as you can, just get this in mind. Your mom, when you go home, and she wants to know when you got to go back to school, you tell her right after you get home, I need to be back to school at a certain date, and that's on Monday before school starts. So that you can come back, and we'll have a retreat on Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then you can move in the dorms, or move in your apartment, or whatever. We can start visiting, and we usually have a big pizza party. We'll probably have an ice cream thing. Seems like everybody's feeding them before they get over here, so we'll have ice cream or some big deal to try to enlist people. And so we would like you to do that. Now, I want to mention something else. When we were at the Glen on the last day after lunch, we talked to you about some projects, some things that we wanted to do. And some of you were either left early or there were some of you that couldn't go to the Glen. So I want to just tell you briefly something we want your help with. We talked about giving to some different projects and things we could help with. And when I said to you at that time, and I won't go through all that I said at that time, we're not trying to get money that you're giving to your church. If you're part of a local church, we want you to give there. But also, it's very biblical, scriptural, to give where you've been helped. And we want to give this year $4,500 that students give to help with send summer missionaries from other campuses across Oklahoma. There'll probably be over 100 that'll go out to many, many different places. And we want to be a part of what our state is doing. Students from all of the other campuses in Oklahoma will be giving. And we want to give $4,500 to help send out those missionaries. We also would like to give $1,000 to help Hope Baptist Church in Fort Worth. That church has been such a tremendous servant to us. Those of you who've gone on senior trips know that. But also the fact that month after month, they send money here just so you can have some refreshments when you go down there tonight and when we can pay the light bill and things like that. Here's a church in Fort Worth that for years has not built a building, and they've taken money and sent it to try to help with things like this. And so they've given money to help. They've now feel like it's time for a building and found an old bowling alley that they're going to renovate, and that's going to be a church, and they're needing some money. And so we want to send them $1,000 that we as students say, hey, we care about what God's doing in this other place. Also, I mentioned to you at the Glen that every one of our students that goes overseas, we want to try to help them $300 a month. At that time, I thought we had about six. Well, since then, we've got about 10. We've got students. I think you're going to Albania. Isn't that right? Stand up. If y'all don't know Oom, y'all do. Okay? Oom's going to Albania. Todd over here is going to Kazakhstan, right? Who else is going to Kazakhstan with you, Todd? All right, Jason coaching right here. Jason is going to Kazakhstan. And Nora, right back here, wave, Nora, stand up. Nora is also going. Now, these people, not only do they go over there and not make anything for the summer, but y'all are needing, what, $2,800 apiece? Is that right? $2,800 to get over there for their ticket. They have to pay their own expenses and everything to try to be over there in a place. This is a part of the old Russia, where people have not had the privilege of knowing about Jesus, and they're going over there to try to share the Lord with students. Okay? Now, those are going to China. Who else? Who's going to China? Okay, Matt Mercer's going to China. Right over here. Joanna James is going to China. Who else? Anybody else? Okay, Mandy James, right here on the front. Mandy Wade is going to China. Y'all are needing how much apiece? 20? $2,800 also, okay? And then somebody's going to Colombia. Is she here? Christina Kaufman's going to Colombia. And then where else are we going? Is that it? Okay, now there are others like Julie. You're going where? She's going to the Northwest. We're not going to help her. I mean, we'll leave her on her own, okay? And then there's maybe some others. A lot of you we know are working at camps. But one of the things we wanted to do just as a group is be able to at least help them $300 apiece. Now, I hope others of you will help them directly, but we'd love for you to give some to help. There are also some things that we would like to do just as far as equipment here. Some of you know downstairs, if you go downstairs, we've got some new chairs to replace those 28-year-old ones. And also we need to do some things as far as equipment. If other additional money comes in, we'd like to do that. And I want to say this to you. Next year, if you're leading a Bible study, you need to produce a Bible study or something, or you need something for your ministry, you can come right over here and do it, and there's not a charge to you for what we do for your ministry, okay? And that's one of the things we want to do, is try to help support you in your ministry and what you're doing. So I'd just like to say this to some of you. Some of you there, I know what we pledged was about over $7,000. That's not enough to take care of even helping the 300 with other things that I've mentioned. But what we'd like for you to do is just the next few days pray about it. Decide what could you give between now and next spring break, next March. Somebody might say, you know, I'll have a job this summer, and I can, you know, I'd like to give $100 to help with this. We don't come and bug you about it. You just write that down on a card, write down your name, and just put your pledge, and you can turn it over to Barbara. You can bring it in a little at a time. You can give it all at once. But this way, you can have a part. You can have a part in helping all these people. If you give $100, some of it's going to go to help these people. It'd help the church. It'd help with these different mission causes. Help send the summer missionaries. So I want to encourage you to be a part of that. And whatever the Lord would lead you to do. Okay? Now, does anybody have a question that you think, hey, there's still something that's not real clear? I mean, there's probably a lot of things that aren't clear, but do you understand basically why the ministry is set up like it is? It's basically set up to help you start growing from the day you arrive and help keep you growing, and it will give you many, you're going to have many, many opportunities. You'll have opportunities to lead Bible studies. You're going to have opportunities, many of you, to serve on these different teams. But we realize that people grow at a different rate. You have different skills, different abilities. And we want on that floor, like if you live on one of the floors of Walker, for you not to think, oh, I'm not the freshman coordinator. That's somebody else's job. Listen, if you live on that floor, you do everything you can to help reach people there. You do the same regardless of where you live, in your classes or whatever. such that we can see people come to know Christ and really grow up in Him.